The silent majority needs a voice. The good news is Gruber is ready to go. Here's Steve.
All right, welcome back to it on a Thursday. Good to have you here. You might have heard there's an election coming up in November, the midterm elections. You might have heard about that. A lot of ballot initiatives and so forth going to be on the ballot. Our next guest will also be running for re-election, Dan Kildee, Congressman from Michigan's 5th Congressional District, joining me here on the program. Congressman, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back on. How are you this morning?
Doing well. Talking about jobs and different things going on, and the economy is doing well. We'll get to that. But I want to talk a bit about new federal funding from the USDA that's going to the Oscoda schools in your neighborhood. Do tell.
Yeah, this is another one of those situations where we have a drinking water problem. In Oscoda, where the former Wurtsmith Air Force Base is located, we have a contamination of groundwater due to the firefighting foam that the Air Force has used really all over the country and all over the world, something called PFAS. The drinking water source for the schools there in Oscoda, the Oscoda County area, was affected, and we had a real problem. So we were able to work with the administration, work with the USDA Rural Development, and got a grant that would allow the school district to connect the municipal water system so that they can have safe drinking water.
Yeah, and this is
one of the things we're going to...
It's an enormous problem, and because you touched on it, Congressman, this is this aqueous firefighting foam, AFFF as they called it, went into use sometime just shortly after World War II, and it's one of the things that has these PFAS and PFOAs and PFCs, which are these long chain hydrofluorocarbons, which is the same thing they're finding at Wolverine Worldwide over near Rockford. But these problems exist all over the state and around the country and the world, as you mentioned, because it's ubiquitous in the waterproofing chemicals, in places where manufacturing took place, and chroming, tanneries all have this. It's a problem of epic proportion. I don't know how we ever deal with it.
It is a big, it's massive. And, you know, the problem, of course, is that the science has evolved pretty quickly in terms of our understanding of these substances. We now know they're really dangerous. So I think we have to start by doing what we can do. And particularly where we have the federal government, who is the responsible party, we need to demonstrate some leadership by saying, look, we are going to take care of the problems that we helped to create. So I've been pushing the Air Force, which has been difficult, to be frank, to get them to step up and take more responsibility and get this stuff out of the ground, particularly out of the groundwater.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, to try to make sure that people have access to safe drinking water. But you're right. This is going to be a story that's going to have a very long tail to it, because this is a growing realization that we've got a real problem on our hands.
Well, I mean, you talk about the federal government taking care of it. I don't see the price tag is so overwhelming for a lot of this that I don't know that it's possible, Congressman, to pay for it. I mean, you talk about the reclamation project just for Oscoda would be millions, if not billions of dollars. And that's just one example. Then you go to Camp Grayling, then you go to, and you keep going from place to place to place, and then you end up in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and so on and so forth. The price tag will be daunting, I think, is fair to say.
Yeah, it's going to be a big, a very big cost. Now, the problem, of course, is we sort of pay for it one way or the other, so we have to figure out what's the best way to do it. We pay for it with, you know, all the significant health impact exposure creates, or do we pay for it by trying to prevent more exposure from taking place?
No, I understand.
I think the science moved quickly. I think we are developing new ways to deal with the problem. In Oscoda, for example, it won't be the billions, but it'll be many, many millions. I don't think it's a choice we have, however. We've got to get this stuff out of the ground.
We got to get to work. All right, so and we'll keep an eye on that. I'm sure we'll talk about that many, many more times in the future. There are midterm elections on the way. The Democrats, your party, looking to pick up some seats in the U.S. House. That seems pretty likely. I don't know how big that pickup is going to be, but on election night, you're likely to pick up some seats. Your seat considered very safe. So my question to you is, in 2016, Hillary Clinton did not secure very well blue-collar, white, working-class voters here in Michigan. Also had trouble with minority voters in places like Detroit and Genesee County and elsewhere. What are the Democrats doing to attract back some of these voters that have left the party basically since 2010?
You know, I can tell you what I'm doing, and I hope more Democrats do this as well, and that is to focus on the issues and the things that we actually make a difference, not try to just draw a distinction between us and the Republicans or just criticize Donald Trump. I mean, I think that's just a waste of air. We need to have an agenda that we are willing to put our names behind and say, look, this is what we will do. And let people make judgments about how well that agenda relates to the struggles that they face every day when they're sitting at home. I think this whole country needs to get back to having an honest debate about real issues and get rid of this sort of tabloid democracy that we seem to have embraced.
I could not agree with you more, Congressman. I'll be honest with you. All of the constant bickering and back and forth and finger pointing and Donald Trump is awful and the Democrats, it doesn't get us anywhere. And so that's why I come back to, because if I were, and I think that what you just said to me, you should be saying to every Democrat that'll listen to you, because I think that a conservative Democrat could fare well in this country. I think somebody that's a blue dog Democrat, as rare as they have become lately, would be a winning combination for your party. But I don't see the Democrats going back to the historical base, basically with your hat in hand, and say, listen, what did we do wrong? Why did you leave us? What can we do? How do we work with you again to get back those blue-collar voters, to get back, I mean, because the support in Detroit and elsewhere, lukewarm at best in 2016. In order to get those voters back, wouldn't you go back and say, hey, how do we work together? Wouldn't that be step one?
Yeah, we are seeing that. I mean, there are always the exceptions. There's been a lot of focus on these primaries that have elected very far left nominees. But at the same time, we see situations like we saw in Minnesota just on Tuesday, where a very good friend of mine, Tim Walz, a very moderate Democrat, won the Democratic primary for governor in a big fashion. So I see signs of hope that, you know, it's not so much even about left, right, or center. It's about just having an honest conversation with people and not getting drawn into this sort of caustic.
It is caustic. Yeah. I agree with that. It is caustic. It is bombastic. And it goes both ways. The president in his tweets, ill-tempered tweets, and then they return fire and it goes back and forth. So let me ask you about two of those pretty far-left ideas that have gained some support in some places. Eliminating ICE and defending sanctuary cities. Where do you stand on a couple of fairly controversial issues?
Well, the issue of eliminating ICE, you know, I understand there are problems with the immigration and customs enforcement, but you don't eliminate the organization because there still will be immigration activity. There will still be customs enforcement. You might not have one agency doing it. So let's just deal with the problem, not pretend that eliminating an agency somehow makes everything better and makes all the problems go away. I think there's far too often a search for a simple one-sentence answer to a really complicated set of issues. In terms of sanctuary cities, I think the line that has to be drawn is whether local communities are exercising their legitimate right to say, look, we're not going to be agents of the federal government versus ignoring violations of law. You know, sometimes these things get painted into very simple tones. They're just not that simple.
You know, I'll tell you this, Congressman Dan Kildee here from Michigan's 5th Congressional District. If Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals could talk back and forth the way you and I do, we'd make some progress in this world. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Anytime.
There you have it. Congressman Dan Kildee, it's the Steve Gruber Show.
To Michigan's future is paved by hard-working construction workers earning a great living and building something bigger than themselves. MichiganConstruction.com is the first step to joining the growing number of hard-working people dedicated to building Michigan. In fact, you can be learning while earning. If you're looking to get started or get started doing something new, go to MichiganConstruction.com. There's plenty to do, and we need dedicated, hard-working people to build Michigan from the ground up. You can start now at MichiganConstruction.com.
And now a message from Salt and Light Global and its Justice Center. Freedom is never free. Fighting tyranny everywhere, the Great Lakes Justice Center speaks truth for the persecuted and most vulnerable. Please consider donating generously to Salt and Light Global and our Justice Center. We need your support. To donate, go right now to GreatLakesJC.org. That's GreatLakesJC.org. GreatLakesJC.org.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
Okay, here goes. I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than I do about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like PB&J, pigs in a blanket. Oh, and fish sticks. They do love fish sticks. Fillets I get, but sticks? What part of the fish does the stick come from? I know I can read a cookbook that'll tell me how to make a red wine reduction, but where are the cookbooks that can teach me how to cut the crusts off bologna sandwiches? Oh, maybe we can compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with brie? Everybody likes brie, right?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to push your food around their plate. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.